Hello, my name is Wolfgang Schüssel. Thank you, Igor, for the introduction, and Minister Ronis for telling me that at the beginning, before the conference started, that he remembers when I was here years ago as the Austrian foreign minister to open the first Austrian embassy here in Latvia, not only in Latvia, but also in all Baltic states. So thank you for your memory, for your excellent memory. Now, let me speak a little bit about the broader perspective of our theme. I think we are now entering in a new phase of globalism. In previous decades or previous times, we had de facto 190 different boats swimming in the ocean, around 190 independent national states. Each boat had a crew, had a captain, had passengers, etc. And the international community was responsible to avoid problems and clashes between these different independent 190 boats. Today it's completely different. We have now a huge cruise liner with 119 cabins, with cabin stewards serving the passengers. The question is there is a captain? Is there a crew? What is the cause? This is the reality today. We are living on one planet, and we cannot act separately, independently. We are linked together. And there is an enormous lack of global leadership. That's true. This is the reality. United Nations cannot deliver such a global leadership, because it's based only on consensus with the veto powers of some member states. You have the G8, you have the G20. Everybody hoped there will be a kind of a global leadership, but de facto it is not really working. And there's no hegemon today, fortunately, no one hegemon in the world telling the others what to do. And the second reality is everybody has big problems today. Look to the United States. They have a huge debt, $15,000 billion of US dollars, and 1 year de facto stagnant process, 1 year stagnation due to this a little bit strange election circus which we are observing today. Look to China. Yesterday was a very interesting article in the Wall Street Journal with the headline, China is stimulus out. The reality, and this is quite interesting to read, China 3 years ago responded to the worldwide recession with one of the largest stimulus programs the world has ever seen. 15% of the GDP were invested, it included $580 billion in government spending. The bulk was in the form of new bank lending, and some analysts estimate half of those loans will eventually go bad. So there is not much room for an additional spending. China has some problems. I'm sure they will solve the problems. They have a very credible and a very professional leadership and technocrats, but they have problems. Russia, on the other hand, Russia has problems like most European and developed countries, an aging society. The demographic factor is playing against Russia. You are too much dependent on national resources, on the world prices of oil and gas. And the European Union is in old headlines during the last 3 years, struggling with the problems, especially of the southern rim, with Greece, with Portugal, Spain, Italy, and others. We are now entering in a very dangerous phase, facing probably a double-dip recession, what some economists predict. Now, what are the consequences? What can we do? There's a cynical word from, I think it was Rahm Emanuel, the chief of staff of the American President Obama. He said, never waste a good crisis. Okay, it sounds cynical, but there is something true in it. A crisis has always the possibility to learn. And it's sometimes much more difficult and much more dangerous if you're living in very good times, then probably the mistakes you can make are much bigger. So we should learn from the crisis. And there are very good examples for overcoming a crisis. Look to the northern countries. Look to Sweden and Finland in the 90s. Look to Iceland, to Ireland today, to the Baltic states, by the way. So the core of the solution is always growth, but growth not coming from more, even more debts and continuing the same problems, the same problematic path of the past, but really going into structural, sometimes painful structural reforms. This happened in the northern countries. This happened in Germany, 2004 and 5 with Gerhard Schröder. It happened in Austria, by the way, when we had built the government in the year 2000. What are these structural reforms? First of all, checks on government spending, change taxes and the welfare system to encourage work, to encourage employment, labor market liberalization. By the way, those countries who opened their labor market are the most competitive markets today. There's now a worldwide war, not a war, but a competition for talents, and those who are more open than others, they will be successful. And of course, the fiscal pact, which was an absolute necessity, should lead and must lead to a fiscal union. A fiscal union must and should lead to a banking union in Europe. That means monitoring and supervisory structures on the European level. And sooner or later, it must lead to a real, full-fledged economic union. It sounds a little bit strange because everybody thinks the European Union is an economic union, but this is not true. The single market, for instance, is not completed, by far not completed. Look to the airspace, to the avian, to the aviatic industry. Look to energy. Look to services. Look to railways. Look to the labor markets. Look to the patents. Not everything is completed. Mario Monti, for instance, presented to the Prime Minister of Italy, and for 10 years he was one of the most qualified and able commissioners in the European Union. He presented 2 years ago a program to fulfill and to complete the single market in all these areas. And this, if it would have been done, it would have been an additional growth per year by 1.5 to 2% per year for everybody. I mean, imagine what that means, an additional growth program of 1.5 to 2%. Now, some analysts, especially in America, sometimes also in Russia or in Asia, think, let the Europeans struggle, it does not affect us. This is a very dangerous, in my opinion, a very silly connotation, because it's not true. It is not true. The Eurozone as such has 5%, takes 5% of the global imports, 5%. European banks have lent more than $3 trillion to the rest of the world. This is twice as much as America. European loans alone to America account for more than 10% of the U.S. GDP. And if European banks would have problems, of course, they would shrink their balances, they would shrink their portfolios, and it would lead to a credit crunch in other parts of the world. China's largest investment bank estimates that a so-called Grexit, as a Greek exit, would cost 4% of the exports of China, and this would reduce the growth rate to, let's say, from 8-something to 6.4%, the lowest growth rate during the last decades. So 1% in decline of the Eurozone growth would lead globally to minus 0.7% in the global output. And the expectation is, if Greece would leave, if Greece would default without the help, and it depends, of course, on the Greek election, it would mean in a minimum 2% reduction of the Eurozone GDP. So this is something what affects everybody. So it's very wise when if the Greek voters vote rationally in favor of a government and a parliament which is willing and able to keep their promises. And on the other side, the European Union and the world would be very wisely advised to help and to support Greece. Greece, by the way, offers us a good lesson to be learned. It lost most of her industrial bases during the last years when, starting with the old Papandreou regime, most industrial areas were nationalized, and this led de facto to an exit of industry a loss of manufacturing. And today, the size of manufactured goods in exports in Greece is 10%. The average in the Eurozone is around 30%. So this shows exactly what it means if you forget your industrial basis. Now, coming to the end, I just wanted to give you some food for thought. I think in politics there are always two tendencies which are sometimes contradictory but always in the mind of voters. One is the desire for stability, and on the other side you have always the wish of change. I was more than 30 years in parliament and 20 years in government, and people are fed up if they always see the same faces and always the same parties and always the same speeches and sentences, etc., etc., etc. This is the desire of hope, change. This is something which is in the mind of the people. On the other hand, they don't like changes. They don't like reforms. Reform is a no-go in some European countries, although it's necessary. So stability and change, both is necessary and important. And everything starts with the economy. It's the economy, stupid, said Bill Clinton, and it's true. So the same goes in the relationship between our countries and between Russia and the European Union. So we have to do our homework to achieve and to continue a stable path, to continue and to gain stability. One is, of course, the European Financial Stability Facility. By the way, it totals, and nobody knows that really, 726 billion of euro. This is, so to say, the umbrella, the protecting umbrella, which Europe, and one quarter is offered by Germany, offers to its member states. On the other side, there's a need for structural reforms. Painful, necessary structural reforms, change, stability and change. And the same goes for Russia. You have stability, the elections are over, and I think the stability is there. On the other side, it is necessary to adapt and to adjust to the new situation. There is no need for a confrontational policy and confrontational rhetoric. This is not necessary. In contrary, we are living on the same continent. We share the same history, sometimes a very delicate, sensitive, bloody history. But it's a common history. And it's a common culture, common values, common Christian values which we share. And we can really develop, as the ambassador said, rightly said, there's a need to develop a common space of peace, of stability, of security, of trade, of cooperation. Thank you very much.